You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. No surprise what dominates the headlines in England after that extraordinary FA Cup final win in extra time for Manchester United as they book a place in the semi-final. So it's where we start today's show as we say hello to Mario and Robert. But Craig, I want to start with you first. That was just brilliant, wasn't it?
Well, it was just a great FA Cup tie to finish the weekend, and for me, Liverpool have only got themselves to blame with the control they had in the second half. But I think more so the story is Man United. Finally, after a difficult season, which they have had, haven't performed particularly well in a lot of games. Games against elite sides, they have lacked identity. They've lacked a game plan, a pattern of play. Even in some of against the Fulhams and other teams, it's kind of been similar. But certainly against the elite sides, they've almost sat back and they've been in awe, but not yesterday. Certainly not in the first 20 minutes.
I see only myself in the middle.
All right, Mario, we'll sort you out.
Oh, right, don't worry, there's a show going on here. I thought it was Gab Marcotti and he was interjecting halfway through. But, you know, look, what did United do? They showed some steel, some backbone, some guts. We talked about it in the commentary, and you talked about it in the show. They got punched in the face just before half-time.
Yeah.
And we've seen them capitulate, but they didn't. And yeah, they got outplayed for long periods in the second half, and they looked as if they were struggling, but they got a second and a third wind, and it was Liverpool that were hanging on. But early on, they passed the ball in the first 20 minutes. They got, and so important. And I think for me, one of the things that was actually helpful for them was Casemiro being out, because they had more energy and legs in the middle of the park. And they picked up second balls and they started passing the ball, and Kobbie Mainoo got it, and he looked like a 25, 26-year-old, not a teenager. They got their fullbacks forward. They got their wingers pushed on, and they really pushed Liverpool back at times. And as you know, I said in the commentary, Liverpool's right side in particular early on, Konsa and Gomez, was a big problem for them, because United were getting runners in behind all the time. And I just felt this was United showing some guts and fight and belief, which hasn't been there when they've played the big boys. They've kind of sat back and went, we're not really in this league. But they didn't do that yesterday, and I have to give them immense credit. Even Antony coming on and making a difference is a big story. And I say it, Liverpool against Man City, they were vintage.
Very much
they
so.
Were far from it yesterday.
Robbo, you hate extra time. Look what happened.
Well, it was a great extra time, wasn't it? It was a great game all round, and it had every sort of 20 minutes had a different story. And as Craig said, the first 20 minutes, you had to be really impressed with Manchester United. They saw there was a lot of space in behind Gomez and Quansah. Quansah was a weakness. He was trying to step up at the wrong times. Then Endo couldn't go with the runs of McTominay at times. Mainoo was dominating midfield and going past people. And they looked as though they were playing with real passion, real fun, and a game plan. And that game plan was to cause Liverpool problems in behind those two defenders. And then we saw the second half, where I'm doing the commentary as well. And I'm sort of saying that I can't see any way back for Manchester United here. Liverpool having complete dominance of the game. It's only a matter of time before they go and get the third goal. They can pass it at will, but somehow they got themselves back into it. And in extra time, they played well, Manchester United, and they showed a lot of spirit and they showed a lot of determination. And Erik ten Hag, whether it was by luck or by judgment, he made some big calls with his substitutions. And I'm not just talking about Antony coming on. He played Antony at left back in extra time because he took off another centre-half in Lindelof. So there was all sorts of things happening in the game. And Erik ten Hag, I suppose, gets a lot of credit in the end.
Rob makes a good point, doesn't he, Mario? Look, you can kind of cut this game up into almost 20-minute periods because there was something happening within that time throughout the whole match where one team had the advantage over the other.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, what you guys highlighted is was
You know, like, Liverpool is very good in counter-attack. The energy normally goes around, and we normally see a team that really controls the game. And we saw that already against the City game, that we were like, wow, you know, in the final stage, it was unbelievable. I think that Ten Hag prepped that situation really well, in the sense of, like, making sure that his team was energetic, making sure that he has an answer to them. And instead of they just attacking only, he gave them the same problem back, in the sense of Rashford and Garnacho. When I looked at Garnacho, guys, we talk about the first half. I've seen so many players do sprints, but the amount of sprints that kid done, and then finding out that he only had like 2 days he trained that week, so because he had a problem with his hamstring, I did not see any problem with his hamstring, because the sprints that he did to cover and double up with Dalot to help him out, you understand, to making sure that he wasn't one-on-one all the time, it was, for me, it was incredible. I watched him and I was like, he was a proper, real problem maker for, you know, as a player for United, but for Liverpool. And I think that made a hell of a difference, because sometimes when we watch teams play, we know everybody wants to play counter-attack. Everybody wants to do it. But I felt like Man United had it really down to the T and played it really well. Regardless of Liverpool should have scored way more. They had a lot of opportunities to finish the game off, and they didn't. And that's what gave Man United the possibility to stay in the game.
Garnacho floated around at times, and he didn't just stand in his wing. And when McTominay scored the first goal, it was because he drifted in off the right all the way across, and he went behind Gomez and Konsa and the Liverpool defence that were completely ball-watching. It seemed that side of the Liverpool side were ball-watching and getting themselves in terrible positions. We talked about it all first 20 minutes, but it wasn't just Liverpool's missed chances. When you think back, McTominay came onto one in the first half, side-footed it straight at Kelleher, should have scored. McTominay should have scored just before the end of the game when he came onto a cutback. Rashford should have scored with that great chance just before the end of the game. So they did have chances. But during that second half, I'm with Stuart, United looked out in the feet, devoid of any more ideas, lacking the ability to retain the ball. And Liverpool...
So why didn't Liverpool capitalise on that?
They couldn't. I thought Liverpool were really... And I used the word in commentary. I thought in the final third, in the second half, they were really casual.
Nonchalant.
Yeah, it was almost like it was going to happen and the game was done. And when you saw one or two of the players getting in these key positions, and so I felt Szoboszlai, Endo and McAllister in the second half, and sometimes Gomez stepped into midfield. I felt their rotation in the middle of the park was tremendous. But they had several opportunities like this, right, where they've just picked out, you know, poor pass, or look at that, that's lazy. It's a lazy little pass from Mo Salah. And this is 5-on-2.
This is the one, isn't it?
5-on-2. Then it becomes 4-on-2. And it's, the pass is just behind Elliot. It's maybe the wrong pass to Elliot. It's a little slow. It allows numbers to get back. There was multiple occasions. And I go back to what I said. For the middle of that second half, Szoboszlai and McAllister were causing United so many problems with the positions that were taken up behind Kobbie Mainoo and McTominay. And they're clever footballers. And United were passing it around, and sometimes Gomez came in, and United couldn't lay a glove on them, but it seemed like for 15 or 20 minutes until they got that second win. But Liverpool, to me, there was no... What's the words I'm looking for? They weren't, there was no cutting edge to it. They didn't want
no urgency.
There was no urgency, it was casual, it was half-hearted in the final third, as if we're controlling this game, they're dead and they're tired, and we're just going to create another chance. And we kept seeing these poor final balls, this poor pass, this poor shot. And I kept thinking to myself during the game, this is only going to take a mistake, a set piece, a corner, or a moment of brilliance, and United are back in this. And I thought Liverpool were always playing on the edge with their decision-making in the final third.
Was it fatigue? Was it complacency? What was it, Robbo, in your opinion?
Complacency. And one player in particular looked rusty, and that was Mo Salah. Yes, Wan-Bissaka did a good job on him, but there was three times, and we just saw one there, where Mo Salah had a chance to play the final pass or play the final cross or get his shot away, and he was sloppy and looked off the pace. And I don't quite know why that was. But in that second half, Liverpool, it certainly wasn't a case of lack of fitness because they looked much stronger. They looked as though they could outrun Manchester United. The Manchester United fans were getting onto their team. Why can't we close the ball down? That's because they've been outnumbered in midfield and Liverpool were making the pitch really big. And the one player that the two players I felt really sorry for were Mainoo and McTominay, because one player for me wasn't doing anything defensively, and that was Bruno Fernandes. I'm not sure what he was being asked to do or what he was trying to do defensively. Was he trying to press high up the field? Was he trying to join the midfield players? He got beaten and he was almost walking back. So it was a massive problem for Manchester United. But the reason that Liverpool didn't take their chances was because they were complacent.
Was that because of what had happened over previous weeks? We've been nothing but complimentary about Liverpool after that draw against City. Did that go to their head a little bit, Mario? All the compliments they've been getting, they're thinking, oh, it's only Manchester United, as Craig said, the goal will come.
No, I don't think they you know, like sometimes when you peak, the danger is sometimes in football is when we hit a peak, it's very difficult to hit it again. And Liverpool is a great side, so they should be able to do it again. But you could see that they asked themselves so much against City. And I have a feeling that they maybe you play Man United and normally you think like, okay, this game I got to win and I'm going to win it. That could be the case, but it's still a big game. This is one of the biggest games in England. And so I don't think, even if you're a foreign player, someone will tell you like, hey, this one, we got to go for it. So away from that, I think it took them too long to finish it off. And I think that's why, because they gave Man United life and they stepped. They kept on giving them life. And normally, they would have finished it off as quick and it was done. If this game would have been played in Liverpool, it would not be the same kind of type of game, because then you would see them pushing all the way. And I felt like when you watch Man U, like you guys highlighted in the middle of the park, what Robbo said about Fernandes, he was lucky that he was still on the field because he was moaning so much. I was worried that he was going to get a second yellow card. Because he kept on going to the ref. And I was like, his body language, he's going to book him. And he was lucky. He made a foul in the middle of the park and the ref didn't give it. He was fortunate. Because if he would have given him another yellow card, people would say like, okay, why do you got to give him a red card? No, guys. Sometimes when you play the game, moments like this, you don't need any reaction of your captain. You just want him to make sure that he steps up. And sometimes what Robert said, yeah, I agree. He could have given a lot more to the team.
To go back to Fernandes quickly, for 20 minutes, maybe 25 minutes, he had the balance correct by supporting Højlund and being in a good position when he had to be defensively. But he, and I don't want to talk too much about this because United won the game, but he very quickly becomes ragged and makes bad decisions as a game gets stretched, as an opponent starts to dominate, he starts to chase the game. And, you know, it's the kind of thing when we talk about running stats. He ran 12 kilometres. And instances like this, running less is better. It's about shape. And when you start to lose your shape, you get punished.
But to be fair to him, he was playing on one leg by the end of the game.
And that's one of the reasons he was the way he was at the end of the game, because he started in that second half, he started to go chasing everything. And when you start to go chasing and the rest of the team are not with you, then, as Robbo said, you're now getting outnumbered. And he gets a little ragged in that sense. And he shouldn't, from an experienced player, but that's where he lacks the sort of defensive nous of the game. But to go back to, I was thinking the same thing as Stuart in extra time, because when he took Lindelof off, I said to John Champion, they're either going to play Antony as a left-sided centre-back or left-back. And he went to left-back. And then Bruno Fernandes was actually playing centre-half alongside Harry Maguire for two reasons. One, he could sort of step forward and play a ball. And the other reason was he couldn't get any further up the field.
Yeah.
And on top of that, when Scott McTominay played the ball through for the Rashford goal to take it to extra time.
And that's where he looked done, didn't he?
He had cramp when he played the pass. Yeah. So United, I mean, you think of all these things. And Liverpool had this game in midweek against Sparta Prague, which was a bit of a canter, to say the least. And they did make some changes, but you would have expected more of that from their players. But it was United who, players that seemed to be getting cramp all over the place. And as Rob was said, the substitutions, I think, were he couldn't really do much else than what he did. And so for United to continue to plug along, bearing in mind it was the walking wounded at the end, was an amazing story.
Can we just quickly touch on the two goals for Manchester United after Harvey Elliott, of course, made it 3-2, the first of which saw Darwin Nunez give the ball away in midfield. Is that part of the nonchalant, like the complacency?
No, I just think that's a forward back in a defensive area who's tired and he's just made a really bad decision. A really bad decision. One, the pass is not on, and two, it's square. And, you know, and the other thing is here, if McTominay plays that any quicker, if he plays that with more pace to Marcus Rashford, Marcus Rashford has to take a touch. And if he has to take a touch, he's not scoring because there's a challenge coming in. But I think McTominay was in such bad condition, that was the most he could hit the ball. So it came at a perfect
from
pace.
By default.
But it was a terrible, terrible square pass from Darwin Nunez. It was a bad decision. But when you think about some of the goals, think about the Endo goal that was chopped off in the first half, which was a ball scooped into the middle of the park by Wan-Bissaka, right? Scooped into the middle. And then we had the second goal was a deflection, but again, it was a ball that was nicked just outside the United box. And the third one came when Onana didn't go long with the ball and Joe Gomez pressed Bruno Fernandes in the left-back position. They gave it away and they scored from it. So it seemed there was a lot happening in that area of the field because that's where the Darwin Nunez mistake came from as well.
Let's talk about the winner, Robbo. Did Liverpool have to have so many people up?
Well, you really want to defend the edge of your box. So you have players in the box, but when it comes out, which they have at this stage, they've got two or three players. But it's a bad decision, bad touch. Obviously, Amad Diallo wins the ball. And I thought to start with that Conor Bradley had done a good job. But then he slips just as he's about to challenge and Amad finishes it really well. But it's not great defending from Liverpool, but you have to give credit to Diallo. He took his chance brilliantly. He just bought himself that bit of space and put it right in the corner. But Liverpool, they should have defended the edge of the box much better than Elliott did.
I thought the ball from Garnacho, Robbo, wasn't the best, and I thought that was going to give Liverpool a lifeline in terms of Bradley, who sort of hesitated a little bit because he's between a rock and a hard place about when to go, and he's trying to delay and delay and delay. When Garnacho played the ball, it lacked pace on it, and Diallo had to wait for it, but because he had to wait, he then dropped his shoulder. And if you look at the clip, I think Conor Bradley slips a little bit, and that just gave Diallo enough time. And by the way, It was anything but an easy finish from that position.
Right.
Anything but.
What a time to produce that finish. And what a weekend it turned out to be overall for Manchester United. Through to the semi-finals, then get the draw that they would have wanted. They'll take on Coventry in the final four at Wembley. And also, we saw Aston Villa and Spurs drop points with regards to the race at the Champions League. Remember, it looks very much like it's going to be top five that are going to be representing England in the Champions League next season. So let me ask you this, Craig Burley. Well, you know what I'm going to ask you because it's pretty obvious.
And I think you know what the answer's going to be.
Really? Ten matches to go. This isn't the kick up the bottom.
Oh, no. Listen. If I'm in the United dressing room, and I don't know what the mentality is in there because we've seen different sides of it this season. Yesterday was the really, really good side. If I'm in that dressing room, this is what I'm saying as a manager. We can... Tottenham and Villa will crumble under the pressure. And when they do, we need to be there to take advantage of it. That's the message I would be portraying to the players. Giving them that belief that these guys, they're already feeling it. They're already thinking about the top four. They're already thinking about the Champions League. And when they falter, and it started already, Villa dropping points, Tottenham losing at Fulham, we need to be there to make sure we're capitalising on that scenario. That's how I would paint it. Now, do I think, as good as yesterday was, United, when they play a mid-table team, could go back to the United we've seen all season? And that's the problem that Ten Hag has. He has to take what they had yesterday. Marcus Rashford's what rate?
Mm-hmm.
The quality in front of goal. The passing out from the back. The winning the second balls in the middle of the field. The pushing the opponents back. All those things that haven't happened, even at Old Trafford, against the Evertons, against the Fulhams, against the Bournemouths, who walloped them up there. They allowed those teams to dominate them. And if they can get away from that and harness more of yesterday, maybe there is a smidgen of a chance. Personally, I don't see it, but if you're a United fan or if you're Eric Ten Hag, That's what I would be hanging on to.
Mario, is it good or bad for Manchester United that the international break now is here? Would they like to have had that momentum, obviously, 2 weeks now until they're away against Brentford? Would you prefer that to have been, for example, Wednesday or next weekend, as opposed to waiting these 2 weeks?
No, you want to hold on to the momentum, you know, and I think Ten Hag, that is definitely what he wants. The key thing for him now, I think Craig tapped into it, is like, yeah, the confidence. Of course you take confidence out of this game. But also you have to remember that this is a coach that regardless if he didn't was, you know, he was one step lower, because I don't see the Eredivisie as same as the level as the Premier League. But the mental strength in the sense of, or the mentality of thinking like, I have to be champion, that's what that he had at Ajax. So now coming to Man United, there's a similar kind of pressure. We have to play European football. So for him to build his team and the confidence that where they're going, I think he is definitely telling them, guys, we can do this. Because that's why they are, like, I watched the game from Villa against West Ham. It should never be like that, that West Ham caused them that much trouble. And the other way around, when Spurs loses at Fulham, come on, guys. If you want to be a top team, regardless if Fulham is you know, they set up really well, but it should not happen. You should not go there, you understand, or let them play against them and give the feeling that they have the opportunity to beat you. And then you go there, you lose the game? No. Then you're not a top team. Then, I mean, I'm not saying that they've never been a top team. They are a top team. But you cannot do this as a top team. You have to win.
Can I just have a little word quickly on Kobbie Mainoo? Holy smokes. I mean, we've seen it this season. He was injured at the start of the season. But we've seen it in patches, particularly recently. He's got three. He's got McTominay in there who's been over the coals before. He's a sort of mid-20s international footballer, workman-like. Scores the odd goal for club and country, grafts, hasn't got, you know, as a limited talent level on the ball. And then we have young Kobbie Mainoo playing against three internationals. One's won a World Cup, McAllister, one's the Hungarian captain in Szoboszlai, and the other one, Endo, plays for his country, I think it's Japan. And here we have a teenager on the ball as if he's got 300 games for Man United. I mean, it's quite scary. And his composure, and he's got lots to learn. He's got lots to learn in the defensive aspect of the game and his positional aspect. But I'm looking at him on the ball, and he'll learn those other things as he goes along, hopefully, and stays injury-free. He'll learn about the nuances of playing in these games and where he needs to position himself. But if you look at his composure in tight areas on the ball, even in defensive areas, he's not hiding. He's not. He's saying, give it to me, I'll take it in. No. I don't care if I'll take it in and I'll play a pass and I'll see a pass. And we saw loads of that from him yesterday. And the quick feet we saw from him in the down the left-hand channel in the first half was quite amazing. But when you think who he was playing against under that pressure in one of the biggest rivalries in club football and European football, then Kobbie Mainoo, not just him yesterday, but as a youngster, I thought his performance until he went off, particularly early on in the first half, was absolutely outstanding.
Ten Hag's Manchester United beat City in the final, Robbo. Ten Hag stays?
Ten Hag might stay if they beat Manchester City in the final, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case. But there's always one result. If you look over history, Alex Ferguson got a result against, I think it was Nottingham Forest, when Mark Robbins, who's manager of Coventry, scored that goal. And that kept Alex Ferguson a job. If he'd have lost that in the FA Cup, he would have been out of a job. There was a game, I think, where Howard Kendall was about to be sacked at Everton. And it was against Oxford. And I think Adrian Heath might have scored the goal. And it kept Howard Kendall in the job. The next year, they go and win the title and they go and win the European Cup Winners' Cup. So this might just be the result that keeps Ten Hag in the job and gets him that bit of confidence and gives the crowd confidence that he can do the job.
What you got to think about here is, and I think the smart money at the moment is suggesting that he's not going to be there next year. There is no concrete evidence, but that's kind of what the rumours are coming out. Now, what could possibly change that? The only thing would be results, right? But if it's just the odd result here and there and the odd performance like this, what you have to think about is this new investment, and these decisions are not going to be really by the Glazers now. It's going to be by the Ineos investments, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, Dave Brailsford and others, is you don't spend out of bare minimum $1.25 billion to make half-hearted soft decisions that might only last till 2 or 3 months of it next season. That's what you have to think about. Yeah. They're looking at a big picture here saying, what have we spent? What do we need to spend? And do you think they're in the business of saying, oh, I tell you what, we'll give them another 6 months? They're not in that business. If they don't, they've already got a good idea at this moment in time, before yesterday and after the game, whether they believe it is working or not. And it's going to take more than just the odd result, I think, for those people spending that kind of money to change their mind. So he's going to have a hell of a finish to the season, I think, for anything to change.
As I mentioned, Manchester United fans not only delighted with the win against Liverpool, but also with the fact they've drawn Coventry now in the semi-finals at Wembley.
Matt Robbins gone back to his old...
I know.
It was actually
brilliant.
Matt Robbins that saved when Robbo was telling that
story. Yeah, Robbo's story, yes.
Yeah, we're stealing it.
Well, I don't know.
Did he mention Robbins?
Manchester City, meanwhile, take on Chelsea. Chelsea, of course, beating Leicester. Really weird game yesterday. They were 2-0 up, looked in control, 2-2. In the end, two late goals would see them book a place in that semi-final against City. Mario, I want to talk to you in particular about Raheem Sterling, who had an absolute shocker. Yeah. Obviously, he had the penalty that was saved. He also had the free kick that went high and wide. What was interesting, I'm not even sure interesting is the word, and I want to get your views on it, is the booing from the Chelsea fans of Raheem Sterling as a man who is still very close to the club. What did you make of that?
I never liked it. I don't like when people boo, you know, because sometimes it's also like, I call it like, you know, when he came there, there were also moments, you understand, where the team was in difficulty and he was the guy that kind of was stepping up and trying to, you know, to move the team forward. He was scoring goals, he was, you know, creating a momentum. At this point now, I'm not going to lie about it. Yeah, of course, he's not at a good place. He's not performing that, you know. And the things that he's doing also, some moments, some of the things that were Sterling is good at, is speed and opening up pockets and stuff like that and creating danger. But striking the ball is not what Sterling, one of his key things. He scored a couple of great free kicks, so that's why he took that free kick. And people that booed him celebrated on that free kick too. And then you have the other part is that he got a one-on-one with a goalkeeper he should have scored. Mm. And you could see his frustration because you could see that it was building up. But one of the key things, I had it, and I'm talking from experience, when you boo a player, I want people to understand that it goes really deep in us. You understand? It's almost like you're screaming, like the feeling of like almost cutting us open because it really hurts us emotionally. And I know people will say like, you got to handle it, you're a professional, you got to deal with it. Yeah, of course we deal with it because you got to do it. But I never liked it and I will never support it because it's sometimes... it's the sheep next to you that makes the noise and then the other sheep next to it start making the noise with him. Wow,
Mario, have you been there? Have you been booed yourself?
Yes. I had it at Birmingham where the crowd went all, the whole stadium pumped against me. Well, that was the same people that supported me and wanted me to do whatever. And then the moment when they booed me, I could feel it. And then later on, a couple of games, they started supporting me again. But still, that feeling, you never forget when people do you bad. And I think that's why I will support him and say, like, no, I don't like it. On the other part, yes, I agree. Does he have to play better? Does he have to score goals and perform better? Yeah, that's Sterling, because Sterling has enough experience to do that. But away from that, no. I never like booers, and I will never support anybody that boos an individual.
I thought it was a disgrace. I thought it was an absolute disgrace because, you know, Raheem Sterling is not trying to do what he did yesterday. He's not trying. He's trying to do the exact opposite. And everybody, no matter whether you're on £1,000 a week or £300,000 a week and you're getting paid for it, it doesn't matter. And I have no problem with fans booing. If Raheem Sterling, like Lukaku did, or anybody else is saying, I don't want to be at this football club. I don't want to play for Chelsea. I don't want to be part of this. Then I can understand their reaction. But when it's purely footballing, people having a bad day at the office, one of your own, and by the way, you win the game.
Yeah.
You're in the semi-finals. And it's not Raheem Sterling that's been making all these bad decisions. He's not signing the cheques. He's not recruiting the players. So it's way over the top. And I'm like Mario. I had it at Derby in the Premier League when I was captain.
Did you?
Yeah, oh yeah. Jim was sacked. Jim Smith got sacked. Mm-hmm. Colin Todd was coach. He took over. We went to Middlesbrough. We lost 5-0 at Borough. I was the captain and it was a bunch of kids. The Higginbottoms, the Riggetts, the Christies. We played Kincladsey away from home, so we might as well have went and played with 10 men. And we got beat. And I remember going over to take a corner in front of a few thousand Derby fans, and they whistled and they booed me. Because I'm the international player. Right. I'm the experienced player. I should be doing more. And you could argue, and I should have done more. But I can't carry the whole thing. And it cuts you. When opposition fans boo you, and I'm sure Rob was the same, nobody gives a stuff.
Right. Yeah. It's par for the course.
60,000 get on your back. You couldn't care less. It's part and parcel. Yeah. When your own fans boo you, and I remember it happening, the game finished, and then all week I was training, and I'm thinking, we're playing Southampton at home at the... what's the Derby? I forgot the Derby Stadium. Is it the
baseball ground?
Pride Park.
Right.
That's where you got booed, Robert. I forgot. I didn't even know where he was playing.
Pride Park. That's where I got booed, Robert. I went to the baseball ground. The game was at Pride Park. And I remember training all week and it was in my head. Now, I had 45 caps for Scotland at the time. Yeah. I'd played in World Cups and played at Celtic and Chelsea. And all week I'm training, I'm going, I'm captain, so I can't hide. I'm first out. I got to go out for the warm-up. I got to go out for this game against Southampton. When we go out at the start, is it tin helmet time?
Wow.
And I'm all week in my mind, I'm thinking, this is going to be tough, because there was if the whole 30, 40,000 are jumping on the bandwagon, this is going to be a long 90 minutes. In all fairness, they did not. But it gets in your head.
Of course.
It gets it, and you'll be... Yes. I defy anybody to say, if your own fans boo you... That I defy anybody that says, well, that would not affect me. It kind of cuts you a little bit.
Yeah. Robbo?
Yeah. I saw two players at West Ham who got so much stick off the crowd, eventually didn't want to play, and they never played again. One player, we were going on the coach, and he got a lot of stick from the home fans, and he said to me, I'm going to be injured next week. I was, what do you mean you're going to be injured next week? He said, I'm not going to go out in front of those fans next week. I'm going to be booed by my own supporters. He said, I just can't cope with it, so I'm not going to play. And another player actually never played again for West Ham, and he was there for another 3 years on a contract.
Wow.
Never played because the crowd gave him too much stick.
But the getting stick and getting booed, and I don't know what exactly this scenario is, they're two different things. We all get stick off our own fans, right? You know, when you're playing in these games and it's not going particularly well and you've got to take a throw in, you're rubbing, and that's okay. It's the
like we heard yesterday for Sterling, that collective booing.
It's the collective booing. It's not the stick. We've all had it. It's not the you're rubbish. Get your finger out. We've all had that.
What I would say,
it's the collective booing. Rob, go on.
What I would say is Pochettino, I think, did a good thing. If Pochettino had bowed to the crowd and taken him off, that the crowd would have got their way. But he kept him on. You know, and everybody said, well, why have you kept Sterling on?
Yeah.
Why didn't you take him off? But he kept him on. He knew Pochettino was going to get sticky. They were singing, you don't know what you're doing. But he actually defended the player on that occasion. And I think he did a very good job to do that.
I think what we've got here is we have, and I think it was, I think Mario touched on this, is that you maybe have one or two or several sort of morons who jump on this, and then the others, I think Mario called them the sheep, then they sort of jump on, and then people just get like, let's join in. And I heard that one of the times I did hear it was actually Gary McAllister. We were playing an international at Celtic Park because Hampden was been renovated. I think we're playing the Czech Republic and the crowd started booing him. Scotland captain. One of the best midfielders Scotland had. You know, we've had great midfielders and Gary was one of them. Terrific player. But he missed a penalty at Wembley.
Yeah, in 96.
And a year or two before that in this big game. And by the way, he was... cut to pieces about that. That's how emotional, that's how much he loved playing for Scotland. And yet, we went through this little bad period, and I guarantee you somebody in the crowd went, oh, he missed the penalty. And they all started booing him, and then everybody joined in. Not everybody, a lot of them joined in, and it was very, very noticeable. And that cuts players. Yeah. Maybe you're booing your captain of your country, potentially because he'd missed this penalty and then Scotland weren't playing particularly well. And it's not everybody in the crowd, but I don't think people... And listen, nobody will feel sorry for footballers, for us. Nobody will. But, people make mistakes. And analysing and criticising is one thing, but the booing from the masses to your own players, unless it's justified by somebody who basically has no interest in playing for your club and has shown that, then I think it's... pretty disgraceful.
Mario, do you want a last word on this?
Yeah, but Craig, but sometimes you also got to... This is very important, huh? We're talking about bullying, that it's difficult for some people to take, and we are pros. But ask yourself sometimes, you understand? Even as a child, you don't want to hear that it's got bullied, or that you have that feeling. Booing an individual, as a supporter, we feel like we're being bullied. So if someone asks us, like, have you ever felt like bullying? Yeah, that's a moment of bullying. You're bullying me now and really stamping on me. But like, right, if it's your opponent's fans, I really don't care. That is, I expect them to be like that. But my own fans, if they want to hurt me, boo me. And then you're really touching me on the inside.
As you know, I get booed all the time now. So even when I go home, I get booed.
Well, yes.
When I drive back tonight, they'll be at the front door. Yeah. Even the three dogs will be there going, boo!
Yeah, I boo you when you enter the car park.
Yeah, yeah.
Security, man.
Use your roll at the window when I leave here. Go, hey!
Just a reminder, plenty more reaction to what we saw in the FA Cup and what else happened across Europe as well on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available now.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, away from the FA Cup, a good weekend for Barcelona. Going to the Metropolitano and winning by 3-0. Barca devour a poor Atleti, says the front page of Marca. Meanwhile, Sport, performance to make you dream. I think they've given Real Madrid too much of a head start in La Liga. But what about the Champions League? Remember, they're on the very much the favourable side of the draw. They take on PSG in the quarterfinals, and then they will take on the winner of Atleti and Borussia Dortmund if they can get past the French champions. The final is another hurdle. But Robbo, overall, Barcelona are very much in the conversation to make it through to the final because of their form and because of this draw, aren't they?
Yeah, and form with not a full side, I would say. You know, when you've got Fort at left back and Kubasi, I think, will be in the side now. You're missing midfield players that could come back in time for the game. Like De Jong and Pedri, if they're fit to play, that makes Barcelona a much better side. You know, you've got Sergio Roberto who's come in for his first game for ages. It's not a great side when you look at it on paper, but Lewandowski is now playing much better than he was earlier on this season. Rafinha's starting to find a bit of form. Maybe João Félix could be a bit more consistent. So, they're a side that could go to the final, but they're still a side you're not quite sure about. You know, it's a great result against Atleti, an Atleti side that went to extra time against Inter were probably very tired. Barcelona, yes, they've got a chance of getting through to the final. Over the course of the season, we've been disappointed with them and still are on certain occasions.
I think Christensen, I don't believe I'm saying this. I think Christensen going into midfield, and I know he didn't play in this game, has given them a little bit more defensive stability. I mean, that's how sort of bad it's got. Yes. Nothing away from Christensen, he's a centre-half. I'm probably counting in one hand how many times he'd played in midfield in his career. And now he's found himself playing the bulk of it recently for Barcelona because needs must, and they need some sort of protection in there. And that sort of helped. The one downside when you're looking at PSG, who are also not a great side, but they've got a lot of pace in the forward areas and the wide areas. Can Barcelona defence deal with that? Now, if you look back 4 or 5 games, defensively it's been better, right? There's been a lot less goals conceded because that period up until 4 or 5 weeks ago, yeah. Do you remember they'd lost...
It was the Villarreal game. That was kind of the catalyst, wasn't it?
Well, they'd lost 22 goals, I believe, in something like 5 games.
Yeah.
At one point. 5 or 6 games, it was 20 to 20 odd goals had been lost. I mean, it was 3 and 4 a game, home and away. There was no... They didn't discriminate. They were equally as bad defensively at home as yes. they were away. And I agree with Robert. This young boy has come in. I think he's 16, Kubasi. He's actually... He's done a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, to go back and play in the defence, where you really have to have a bit like Mario, a big physical presence back there, you can handle yourself. He's been able to go in and handle himself. He looks quite a strong young boy. And defensively, they've looked better. I'm not saying that they're great, but they've looked better, and that gives them a chance. My God, I can't believe we're sitting here talking about Barca,
yep.
you know, comfortably going to make the top four, mm-hmm. which was...
Yeah, looking, completely second now, looks like.
And finding a pathway to the Champions League final.
Yes.
Xavi's probably thinking... Maybe I just went a little early on this. I'm leaving because things have just turned around a little bit for them.
Mind you, he's got a big call because in the big games when they've played against Real Madrid, he's played different people at right back to play up against Vinicius Junior. Against PSG, yeah. he's got the best player in the world, maybe one of the best players in the world, if not the best yeah. player in the world. Is he going to play at centre forward? Is he going to play at left wing? And that's when he swaps Koundé and Araujo over. And he's got a big decision who he picks to try and deal with Kylian Mbappe. That's a big choice for him.
Well, Araujo did a great job, apart from one game on Vinicius, did a great job, Robbo. Mm. But Koundé, when he's gone to centre-half this season, when he's played centre-half, and he was the one at Mondebar, I want to play centre-half. He's been terrible yeah. at centre-half. Mm. Absolutely terrible. So... I mean, is he going to even risk putting him in there and changing it around? I'm not quite sure he is.
Meanwhile, Real Madrid, of course, and you called the game, their victory in Pamplona over Osasuna, Robbo. They've done enough, you feel, over the period of the season to become champions at the end of the campaign. They, of course, take on familiar foes, Manchester City. Craig made a good point when we were talking about this game last week. Is that considering the demolition that Manchester City produced on Real Madrid last season, has Real Madrid progressed enough to change that? And there is an argument to say they've actually regressed.
Yes. Well, Ancelotti has to get his tactics better than he did in that game at the Etihad, where he allowed Manchester City all the possession. They were too open. He had players on the field that weren't very good defensively. Modric was outrun on that occasion. So he's got to get his tactics absolutely right against Man City. And few coaches ever know exactly how to play against Manchester City. Real Madrid, I think, are a good side at the moment. They're scoring goals. They're playing some good football. Vinicius Junior, who you know has been excellent for them. They've got their midfield sorted out. They'll probably have Bellingham back in the side. But I can't see them beating Manchester City. Manchester City are going to be too good for them over the two legs. And I think it's going to be the same fate for Real Madrid as it was last season.
Well, the blueprint really was what Liverpool did at Anfield.
Yeah.
But can't, you know, what Liverpool did in their pressing game, we saw the Rodris, the Bernardo Silvas, the Kevin De Bruyne's and others as frustrated and as sloppy on the ball as we have done any other time this season, right? By a long way. Now, they didn't win the game, Liverpool, but they damn well should have done. The question is, does Real Madrid have that ability and energy in the side? I mean, I suppose if Modric won't play, but you'd imagine Toni Kroos will play. If it's Camavinga and Valverde and it's Rodrigo and Vinicius up front and Bellingham if he's fit and where he should be, those have got the youthfulness, but have they got the appetite to go and do that, play that pressing game and really ask questions that Liverpool asked Man City? If they don't, why would it be any different, as Stuart said, to City having this
without
possession?
Militao, without Courtois?
And then you then you're prodding at the weaknesses. Yeah. And I think from Real Madrid's perspective is you've got to try... The best defence is a strong offence. And keeping... And what they've done in some big games this season, Real Madrid, and thinking back to the big game against Girona recently, which at the time was a sort of top two clash, they did not allow Girona near to their back four. They stifled him up the other end of the field. So they kept him away from the weak point in their side. And Carvajal played centre-half that day. That's what they have to try and do against City, is keep the Silvas, the De Bruyne's, the Dokus, the Erling Haaland's, is keep them isolated and away from Real Madrid's penalty box. Because once they get around there, then that's when these guys tend to pick these brilliant passes and Real Madrid will get destroyed. It's going to come down to, as Stuart said, Ancelotti's tactics, his personnel, and whether they think they can take on Man City toe-to-toe.
And of course, the other game in that half of the draw is brilliant. Arsenal against Bayern Munich. Arsenal go into that tie as favourites. Bayern, of course, have had a horrible season overall. Thomas Tuchel will be leaving at the end of their campaign. This should be a lot of fun, shouldn't it, Robbo?
It should be. All you could say is that Arsenal have been excellent in the games I've seen so far since the Christmas period. The two games where they haven't played quite so well were in the Champions League against Porto.
Porto.
They made hard work against Porto. Porto were able to slow them down. They couldn't get their fluency. And that's exactly what Bayern have got to try and do and then cause Arsenal problems on the counter-attack. But over the course of the two games, once again, I would say Arsenal are favourites to beat Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich just haven't seemed to be a team this season. They've got some good players, the same players as they had before, but Thomas Tuchel hasn't got the best out of the team or individuals.
We'll talk about these games, of course, in a lot more detail as kickoff approaches. Just a reminder, plenty more reflection on what we saw this weekend on our YouTube channel. If you haven't done so yet, be sure to go to ESPN FC and subscribe.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Meanwhile, significant news at the bottom of the table. Nottingham Forest have been deducted 4 points because of PSR breach, which takes them into the relegation zone. 1 point off Luton. Oh, your grandson won't be happy, Craig.
Do you want me to give you the full rendition of profit, loss and sustainability, whatever the hell it is? I could go...
Have you told him?
Because I have no idea. God, I'm not... I would imagine he knows. I spoke to my son today.
Yeah.
I think if I was a Forest player, and I have no idea how they get to these decisions, you know, 10 points for Everton, reduced to 6, 4 for Forest, might be reduced, I don't know. Everton fans are, I've seen some stuff online right. Where Everton fans are just going, this is the Premier League, sort it out. We've got Man City with 115 charges, you've got all these things going on. If I was a player and I knew that was coming, which I think Forest have pretty much known
right.
what's sort of coming their way, I wouldn't be too disheartened with 4 points. I mean, it's put us back in the bottom three.
Yeah.
But it's not put...
Considering those around you as well.
It's not put them completely out of the equation. You can't say, well, we got... You know, they lost a late goal against Luton at the weekend, so there was another 2 points gone.
Yeah.
You can't look at it as a player and go, well, that's it. What's the point in turning up? You know, we're not Sheffield United. We're not done. You know, we're done. We're not going to make up 10 or 12 points, whatever it is. It's not undoable, and I think that has to be the encouragement. And whether they appeal or not, I've got no idea. But purely on the basis of the amount of points, it's not a disaster. It's not slinging them head first into the championship with no hope. And as a player, as a manager, you can't ask for much more than that.
Robbo?
And there's four teams in it because Brentford are losing games left, right and centre at the moment. They could come down. Everton aren't winning too many games at the moment. You know, Luton, you don't fancy them winning too many games from now to the end of the season. So they are within touching distance of those sides. And they've got some good players. At the moment, the manager isn't getting the best out of them.
Robbo, I need a favour.
Yes.
I promise you this isn't joking. We've lost men the tickets. who's going to give Robbo tickets?
Arsenal.
Who's he got for Arsenal? Yeah, exactly.
West Ham.
Obstructed view.
Coventry. Hey, Coventry. Yeah. Ex-Coventry man. Yeah. Semi-final.
Very true. Robbo, can you stay for extra time? Because Mario's gone. His internet's done. Is that all right?
I know it's late. For you, Dan, anything, as you always know.
Hold on. Hey, if it goes past midnight, that's a double bubble, isn't it?
I've had enough of this. Right, I've had enough. We've got a guy playing golf today who's got dirt in his eye, can't come on the show.
That's Ian.
We got Mario, who's pulled his wire on his internet.
That's it. He's done. So you can join Robbo and Craig then on Extra Time to answer your questions.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next with Stuart Robson. Oh. Welcome in there to the latest edition of Extra Time.
How do you swing?
Right. Right. Ian Dark isn't on today because he hurt his eye playing golf.
How do you swing? How do you swing? And how does a dark?
So yeah, he got some dirt in his eye, and infected.
When you get dirt in your eye at the golf, which I've never had.
Right.
I don't know how you do that, by the way. I got a golf ball in the chin once.
That was just someone aiming at you.
No. Yeah. Well. Yeah. What happened was, long story short, I was in the woods, bad drive. I tried to play this ball out. There's a big stone in front of me.
Okay.
I just couldn't move because it was embedded.
Yes.
So I couldn't move it.
Don't break rules.
Don't break rules. I'm a stickler for rules. And stupidly, instead of just taking my penalty drop, I tried to play it. I thought I had enough loft to get over this little rock, and it hit the rock, came back up, hit me here, up, hit me in the chin.
Oh man.
Don't advise it at home. It was a bit sore.
No, I bet a bit sore, isn't it?
Teeth stayed in, no?
There you are, but still, yeah.
Well, they're cemented in.
I'm not saying anything.
But how can't you get mud out your eye?
I don't know. It must have just... He's had a bad reaction.
It's a great excuse. I've never thought of that one before.
Mud in the eye.
That's in my...
And then Mario was supposed to be on Extra Time, but then his internet is broken, so Stuart Robson not only has now stepped up to replace Ian Dark for the show, but now to replace Mario for Extra Time, Robbo. What a trooper.
Oh, yeah, I'm a true professional, Dan, you know, as you know.
That's
willing
extra, Robbo.
That's on the invoice.
That's on the invoice.
Double bubble.
FC show.
What invoice?
What show? FC show.
FC.
FC. Didn't you get your teeth in properly?
unexpected extra time appearance.
Okay. All right, let's get to the questions. What is the difference in approach and a preparation for analysing a game in studio versus calling it live? Craig Burley was fantastic on yesterday's game.
Thanks. That's the boss.
Well, yes.
Well, contrary to one or two people on Twitter, I wasn't at home.
Right.
Somebody said I was doing it from home.
Really?
But I was doing it from Bristol, which is not ideal. So what's the preparation?
Yeah, and what prep do you do? So, for example, what are your notes?
No, I don't have any notes.
No notes?
When I used to go to a game, when I was broadcasting in England, going to Old Trafford and all these games, I'd always have like an A4, I'd have a a notepad, and I would write the teams down. You know, when the teams come out, team formations, I'd write, would write the team information down. You know, maybe next to each player there'd be a small snippet, you know, how many goals or if he'd had an injury. I don't really want to use that too much because that's a commentator's job. But because I'm at the game, I would have the formations and the subs, and I'm not, I don't have a lot in, I don't have, I've never have, never been one for turning up with preconceived ideas about what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Because what I'm going to say is generally what's going to happen. So I don't want to write down all these things that are stories, because the story is the game. And then the difference was yesterday, all I did yesterday because I was here, I switched the computer on, our computer in the commentary booths, logged in, got the one of the websites up with the teams and the formations and the subs, and then I take it from there.
Right.
And the rest of it I've got in my head, you know, who's been playing well, who's not been playing well, who's injured. So you kind of just, all for me, doing a commentary is always about having a picture in your head, what the main storylines are, who's injured, who's been playing well, what formation changes, and then from there is trying to just paint a picture, but not too many words.
Okay, succinct.
And I think this is, we know, we talk about this, and Stuart's certainly not one of these, because we've been doing this quite a while in the coin. Stuart's been doing commentaries a long time. Is there is a bad habit nowadays, and a really, really bad habit across the board. And the reason is now it's a conveyor belt of people doing co-commentaries, colour commentaries, come with what you want. And they come in, they think it's easy, right? They come in, they put headphones on, they're at the game or they're in a booth, and they think it's a piece of cake, and they just pick a mic up or they have, and they talk. They talk and they talk and they talk and they talk. That's radio. There's a game going on, there's a crowd, there's pictures, people can see it, but nobody tells them. And it's the worst habit in broadcasting at the moment, is nobody's telling people they're talking too much. And a TV commentary, it's, you're not telling people what they can see, you're telling them how it happened, and you have to be concise. And I personally think people like Jim Beglin and Robbo are some of the best at it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people now who just waffle and waffle and waffle, and it's horrible in a commentary. But as I say, execs now across the board in different countries are just going, do you know what? How much is it costing? That's cheap. We'll do it. That's how it works.
Rob O'Reilly, Craig says you're also one of the best in the business. Come on, be very nice today. What are your notes? Similar to Craig, or is yours more detailed?
Craig is spot on with everything he's just said there about the commentary. If you hear a co-commentator or colour commentator, whatever you want to call them, start saying any stats or anything like that, they're not a good co-commentator, because they're not judging the game as they're seeing it. They've got a preconceived idea. It's the commentator's job to give you the background to the game, to give you the stats if they need them. My job as a commentator is to tell you why it's happening. You know, if I'm with John Jambin or if I'm with Ian Darg or Rob Palmer, they're doing the commentary of the game, and they might say, you know, Manchester United are dominant at the moment, and I have to tell the public and you and whatever why they're dominant, why are they causing problems. And I've just heard Craig, we've been on the show talking about why Manchester United caused problems behind Liverpool's the right-sided centre-half and the right-back. And that's exactly what Craig's job was, and that's exactly what my job was in that game. And Craig's got everything absolutely spot on there.
Wow, this is all very nice.
No, it is, but I think there's a big difference here. And I've always, you know, when I was working for BBC Five Live and others and then working for TV, it's a complete different broadcast skill. But when you're doing a radio commentary, obviously there's no dead air, you're talking a lot, you're working with your commentator, and he's leaning on you, and you're, because he can't talk for 90 minutes. Well, some of them can, they do a great job, the radio commentators, as you know, an amazing skill set. But when you're doing a radio commentary, you're telling people who are driving a car or sitting at home, you're telling them what's happened. You know, he's gone down the left-hand side there, whoever it is. Garnacho's gone down the left, he's beaten two people, and he's whipped it in low into the six-yard box, and he's coming. You're not doing that on TV, because people have seen what's happened. And so these things are completely different skill sets, but there's no point going on about it. It won't change. But I was saying to you before we came on air, when I used to work it in the old days for Satanta Sports, and John Champion and I were the commentary team, and Macker was in the studio with Angus Scott and Les Ferdinand and others, all the production had meetings. The big wigs, the bosses, and the match directors and the producers, they all had meetings at the weekend and said, what was it like?
Was the commentary good enough? Was the studio good enough? Was it too flat? Was it this? Did he talk too much? And they, you would get feedback, right? Good or bad. I don't feel... And we don't need that, by the way. We're all right.
Oh, yes. Before we start meetings.
If the boss phones tonight, I won't be picking the phone up.
We're outside having meetings every day now. I'm blaming
you. No, we weren't having meetings. We weren't involved in the meetings. They had the meetings, and then they came back and said, you're crap.
Right.
Are you good?
Right.
But you're getting feedback. I believe, and I know what happens now, I don't think there is any feedback for the bulk of these people now. And it just then becomes a complete waffle fest. And it's not commentary for me.
Which you prefer, here in the studio or doing games?
I've always loved being at the games. I'm not big for sitting in a booth 3,000 miles away.
Right.
And that was the other thing from yesterday, you know, when talking the question about how you're doing it. It was, you know, without giving any secrets away, we were not at the game. Mm. John Champion was in Hammersmith and I was in Bristol.
Yes.
So there is also the challenge of not talking at the same time, which is horrible TV. But I like doing both, you know that? I love being at the game, but then I like studios.
Maybe you should do some more games.
Would you like me to?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I wasn't in the studio yesterday.
I know.
And I felt you were in your happy place.
Robert, what do you prefer?
I prefer co-commentary. You know, I like being in the studio every so often, but my main job is a co-commentator. That's where I think I'm at my best, and it's what I enjoy. And I don't mind being in a studio. It means you don't have to be in a car park somewhere an hour and a half after the game, still can't get out and things like that. And then when you get to the game, we haven't got your authorisation ready yet. So if you could just stand over there for half an hour. They're the problems. So I don't mind being in a studio. And we do a lot of games from a studio. And I've done that for many, many years now.
Next question is also about your commentary yesterday, Craig. Does Craig Burley think Garnacho's first name is actually Young? Did you call him Young Garnacho a lot?
Oh, did I? Young Garnacho. Well, he is young, isn't he?
Well, he is young, yeah. There you are.
What would I say?
Factually correct.
Old Garnacho.
There's old Garnacho. Old middle-aged Garnacho.
Young Garnacho.
Aging Garnacho.
At what point do you... Sometimes you have these tendencies and you don't realise you're doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but... I don't think Man United fans could have been too upset with me yesterday.
No,
there is the other side. You probably didn't make the same mistake as I did in the game. I have a real problem with... now, I'm going to have to get it right. Conor Bradley... Twice I called him Bradley Connor, so you probably didn't make that mistake.
I didn't.
Well, there we are, Robbo.
I probably made a few, but
okay. Away from all of this talk.
Hey, Robbo, what are you saying?
Just you two, pat yourself on the back. Things are great.
We're gonna have
meetings every day now.
Oh, it's bosses having meetings.
Oh,
they have. We have meetings at this place. ESPN is meeting central.
Right.
You've only got to walk from here back to your desk. And people that work in hockey and all these other sports, they're having meetings.
Yes.
They're having meetings about yesterday's meeting.
Yep.
And the meeting before. And we walk back and they're wondering
why
we're
here. When we used to have morning meetings? You used to phone in. I can't remember, were you here for those?
Trust me.
If we ever
get to the point we're having phone-in meetings...
It was just Gav Marcotti talking a lot.
I'm off.
That was it.
I'm
that was
on the golf course 7 days a week.
A percentage chance of an El Clasico final in the Champions League, Robbo?
Quite a big chance, I would say, apart from I think Barcelona have got a better chance of getting through than Real Madrid have got.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Real Madrid won't get past Man City. So I think it'll be a Man City, maybe, Barcelona final.
How long did you allow yourself to handle any big loss? What was the usual response from your manager post-game and subsequent training sessions? So if you were playing for Liverpool, how long would it have taken you, or will take you, to get over this game?
You go home, it's a bitter taste, you do what you do, you know, you might go home and have a couple of beers, or... You always struggle with, I don't know about Stuart, but... You always tend to struggle to sleep after a game.
I can imagine adrenaline.
Win, lose, or draw, you kind of, things are, you just, I don't know, always found it difficult. But, you know, whether it's playing Chelsea-Arsenal games, or, you know, FA Cup semis or finals, or playing, you know, the first Celtic-Rangers game I ever played in at Ibrox, first ever Old Firm game I ever played in, it was at Ibrox, we lost 1-0. We were on a tear at the start of the season. We had a really poor first two games under Janssen. Then we went on a tear, played Liverpool in the UEFA Cup,
got knocked out on away goals, but really gave him a bit of a going over until McManaman scored the greatest goal of his career at Celtic Park. We were on this tear, signed all these new players and were playing great. Went to Ibrox, lost 1-0, Richard Gough scored, we played terribly. Right, but you don't have time to wallow for 2 weeks, because right, there's going to be a long race to a title at the end of the season. There's probably a game on the Wednesday. So you got to get, and by the way, the game, when, you're talking about, as we did in the show, about supporters giving you stick, when you come off the back of a defeat in an Old Firm game and you run out for the warm-up the next game, they're not exactly lauding you. So you're getting stick, so you're under pressure straight away. So you don't have time. You go home, you wallow for a night, and then if you're in the next day or whatever it is, you've got to pick yourself back up and go again. Otherwise, you'll never get out of bed.
What's it like when you lose a big game, but you have to then go back and be dad? Like, the kids are young, they don't really get it. You kind of...
I don't change. I'm grumpy anyway.
No, I know that, but it must be strange because you can't... Well, maybe you can. Just go and lock the door and say, look, nobody talk to me, because it's been a shocker. But then the kids at a young age don't quite...
Yeah, they were quite young, particularly then. I'm just go home, have a couple of beers, and try and relax and try and put it out your mind. But yeah, I know what you mean. You know, I think that's worse for a manager. Now, managers' kids are, when he becomes a manager, probably kids are probably grown up. But a manager has to go. See, to me, a player can get it out of his system quickly. But for a manager, it seems to me, and Robbo's coached, it's 7 days a week, and it's one. You're always just one game away from the next bad result or the next been under pressure to be fired. And it seems to me, how can a manager go home and put the ball away? I think it's easier for a player, but I think when you're in that situation and you've got 25, 30 guys to worry about, you get your job to think about, you've got formations, training, signings, recruitment, boardroom meetings, how do you ever go home and put that away?
Yeah.
I remember Stevie said when he was at the Revs, which is, you know, MLS, but it's not Premier League, he was on blood pressure tablets.
Yeah.
Because he just couldn't, like, it was constant stress.
Robbo, I want to ask you a slightly different question, because you talked about your injuries in the past. So as opposed to you lose a game, then the next weekend, at least you have the chance to redeem yourself and go out there and win it. Like, when you're battling with injuries for as long as you did, that's really got to take your toll on your life as a whole.
Oh, but my injuries were long term, so I wasn't sort of playing 2 weeks, then missing 2 weeks, then playing two.
Yeah.
I was out for a year or a year and a half. So my focus, I had no problems with that. My focus was, I'm going to get fit. I'm going to go to and same place that Craig has been to, a bloke called Alan Watson, and I used to go there with some of the top rugby league players, the top rugby union players, and it was a fitness a centre and an injury clinic. And I used to go there for 7 hours a day, and I used to work as hard as I possibly could. And I would always say, I've got a goal to get back and be as good as I was before. And that was that, so I had no problem with that. That was like my job when I was injured. Mm. What I would say is, going back to the previous question, I was quite, and this makes no surprise to you, Dan, I was quite a selfish person in terms of the mentality when I was playing football.
Robbo's an only child.
So the big problem I had is if I didn't think I played well. So if on a Saturday, and most of the games were on a Saturday in those, if I didn't think I'd, even if we'd won, if I hadn't played well, that would linger and I'd want to play the next game as quickly as possible. I'd want to get back out there on the training field as early as I could on the Monday. When you played well, Sunday was great, Monday was great, and then you've got the next game to prepare for. But it was a difference. It wasn't so much the result, it was how I played. That was the big problem.
Injuries are soul destroying.
I bet.
Do you know what's more soul destroying? When you're watching your team struggle and you're pummeling away in the rehab. And actually, at one point at Derby, I over-rehabbed. And that was my fault because I didn't listen. I actually was training, you know, it was the opposite of not caring. I pushed myself so hard from a knee operation on, there was a, you know, one of the stepping machines, so it's like a conveyor belt and it steps. And I was going from like a workout in one machine to another. And I kept doing this machine and I was pushing, I'll do another half an hour. I won't take a day off tomorrow. I'll do it again. And I flared my Achilles.
Trying to rehab
from a knee operation. And that was because I didn't listen to my body and say, you know, take a day and don't do that. Take a day's rest. And so I got so frustrated. And on top of that, I'm not going to mention names, but on top of that, there was people at the club thought I didn't care.
Right.
So I'm coming in to a football club. I'm working my
backside off. I've caused a bit of a problem by myself, but it's not through laziness, it's through just eagerness to get back. And I've got a bunch of people here who think I don't care. That's a very difficult environment to go into. It's very soul destroying. You're watching your team get beat. You know, and I said to this guy at the time, I said, we're likely to be relegated. I'm the most experienced player here, or one of them. Not only do I not want to play in the Championship, I take a 20% pay cut if we get relegated. Do you think that I don't want to get involved here and help out? And it gets so frustrating, and I couldn't actually, I just, in the end, and we talk about injuries. Then when I was trying to come back from this Achilles, I would go and train with, I said, right, I think I'm going to be all right. And I'd go and train with the guys, and 10 minutes in, this thing would just start screaming. So I'd go back out, try something else, come back, do the same thing. And then I took an injection in it to try and take it away, and in the end I had surgery on it.
Right.
And every day I went out to try and train and walked off the training ground, I could tell the coaching staff thought that I couldn't give a stuff. But that wasn't the case.
No.
That wasn't, and that's frustrating as a player, because there's nothing you can do about it. They're not going to change their mind.
Mm.
And your body's your body. And you know, when we talk about overtraining and stuff like that, it's so important sometimes to, you know, I never took time off. And just put, and that's when we talk about these players these days who are playing and seems to be, you know, 3 games a week.
Yeah.
And they're training almost probably every day. And I think back now, and I think, you know, at times like that, you actually need 2 or 3 days to take yourself for a rest. But sometimes, and again, Robbo said he was selfish, I said I was stubborn.
Right.
And I wouldn't listen. And I try, and I
two just, descriptions of you both, which won't surprise anyone.
I'm pummeling on, and I paid the price because my Achilles almost snapped on me.
Last word to you, Robbo, before we go.
Yeah, I mean, I realised when it was when I was doing the right thing, because I went away from West Ham and said, I'm not gonna have treatment off you because you've got nobody qualified to treat me. The surgeon doesn't want to know me anymore because I've had a row with him. The physio doesn't know how to rehabilitate, so I take myself off to this clinic and get the best treatment possible. I come back one day with a list of everything I'd done and a report from the physio, and I see one of the West Ham players who'd been injured for a little while sitting on a little pedaling bike, eating a sausage sandwich, watching the telly, and they thought he was a better professional than me. And that's when I realised I was doing the right thing going somewhere else.
Oh, a sausage sandwich. Oh,
see, hey, if you're watching this, yeah, and you want to get into TV, selfish, stubborn,
wow,
and be a couple of argumentative chaps.
There you are.
That's a start for you.
Boom, you're sorted. We've had an email from the boss at 9 a.m. Mandatory meeting tomorrow. Thanks for that, Craig. ESPN FC.
Hey, I've got mud in my eye. I can't come. Get stuffed.
We wish you all the best, Ian. I hope you get better soon.
He's not dying. He's got mud in his eye.
Right, clearly.
Well, I hope he doesn't die tonight. I'll be not going to look good tomorrow.
No, that would be the top of the mandatory meeting. Stop telling people they're not dead.
All right, Mike, edit that out.
ESPN FC then, back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.